Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the Talking City podcast. Now, there's two unusual faces here and one very usual suspect. My name is Seb Parkinson. You will have heard me on the Talking City Extra podcast throughout the back end of this season with my esteemed colleague, Isaac Johnson, who has joined me several times. We've now been upgraded to the Talking City podcast in the absence of Joe Bray and Dan Murphy. But Simon Barkowski, the man that never takes a day off, is joining us. Isaac, Simon, how are you guys doing? And what have you been up to? We've not spoke for a while.
I've just been sort of checking out Brighton and Brentford and all that they have to offer, really. It's, spend quite a lot of time on motorways recently, which has been, do you know what, better than expected, I would say. I've not queued much. So that's the extent of my happiness.
Yeah, well, I've not really been doing it. Probably the most interesting thing I've done today is I got orders from my mother to water the garden. So I have that's probably the extent of my day to day. But in terms of football, I've actually been looking back over the season, thinking, blimey, it's actually been a long season, hasn't it? In terms of when the Premier League first started and the World Cup and everything. It seems a long time ago since City first touched the pitch against West Ham, but two massive games coming up.
It's bizarre, actually, because the start of last season, we were all talking about this World Cup that's going to disrupt the season. But for City especially, it seems that the World Cup was a bit of a good gap, wasn't it? Because City's form just sort of catapulted into it. But we want to start at the end. We want to start at Brentford. City, Brentford done the double over City this season, Simon, and you were there down in the capital again, one of the many trips down to London that you've had this season. Just run us through that game. What was the atmosphere like? What was the performance like? There was a lot of changes in there. A lot of youngsters made their sort of debuts or one of their few appearances of the season. What was it like?
Yeah, I don't know if you can count Brentford as the capital. It's very, very west. It's
anything north, south of Birmingham to me is the capital.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lovely stadium. It's a nice setup, and Thomas Frank's got a very, very good team there. It's sort of a bit strange. I think after City won the league, I think we were kind of expecting Pep to go sort of strong against Chelsea, then rest at Brighton, then go strong again. And he kind of went the opposite to that. So it meant that he played a very good team at Brighton, or a very strong team, and then kind of rotated again. And it was pretty much the team he played at Chelsea, at Brentford. And, you know, Brentford showed that this City B team would not win the league, because they more than matched him on the day and got kind of the goal that they probably deserved on the balance of play. So City's winning streak was ended at Brighton, and their unbeaten streak was ended at Brentford. was sort of driving back, and there was a City fan ringing into Five Live talking about how disappointing it was to end the season on a defeat. And they were kind of saying, but it's not the end of the season, is it? You could win the treble. And he's like, I know, but it's disappointing to end the league on a... You're like, yeah, it doesn't really matter, does it? So it was kind of a day where, you know, you felt the excitement and nerves and drama of the Premier League were very far away from West London.
Yeah, the just a little stat for you: the Barcelona women's team, they went like a full season and more without losing, and they lost on the last game of the season as well. So maybe there's a bit of an omen there that losing on the last day of the season. But as you say, you know, City are on for the treble. I guess in the grand scheme of things, losing your last game of the season is, you know, and going out with a loss is not great on paper. But given what City have given the fans this season, you know. The league was wrapped up. Players needed resting for the FA and the Champions League finals. You know, who really cares? Isaac, you were on desk that day to cover City. They weren't on TV because it was a joint half four kickoff, and it was the relegation teams were focusing on. What was it like covering City from afar?
Yeah, I mean, it's like Simon said, really. You felt the main stories of the Premier League were not there, which is very contrasting to last year, of course, when, you know, the title went down to the final day and there was that dramatic comeback, and it was very much not that. You know, it feels like these last few games have been almost, you sort of just waiting, you just want to go because we want these big massive two games to come, and that's credit to City, really, that they've wrapped the title up as early as they have. I think, you know, Guardiola alluded to it a few press conferences ago, that the fact that they've finished the season so early and been able to prepare is very rare. And the fact they're going for the treble and being able to prepare for these next two massive, massive games is something that doesn't come around too often. But again, just riffing off what Simon said there, is, you know, the City's B team. You know, there's perception that City can field two teams. You know, City could field two teams and they can win the league. Well, that's not the case. I think we've seen that. There's still a lot that the bench players have to live up to, or the rotation players. But in the grand scheme of things, in terms of what's at stake in the next few weeks, you can obviously understand the rotation. You can understand, for example, Gomez getting a run out when he hardly has all season, and so on. So yeah, the feeling from the desk was pretty similar, really. The stories are elsewhere, but that's because City have earned it.
Yeah, and Foden's one of these players where everybody's got all this potential. He's one of these up and coming prospects in world football, and yet he's not necessarily a starter in that City team. Now, we were talking sort of off air, shall we say, just before we began, and talking about Foden putting in a good performance and him having a place up for grabs. Simon, what's your opinion on sort of where City should be at, you know, with their team, and how good is it that they've got pretty much a full squad available, despite Guardiola's cryptic comments, which we'll get onto in a minute?
Well, yeah, Foden's a really interesting one because he must be up there as one of the most talented players in the squad. You know, like 2 years ago when City played Dortmund in the Champions League, Foden was comfortably the best player on a pitch that included Erling Haaland. And, you know, when City played United at home this season, Foden and Haaland got a hat-trick. But he's not been in the team for, like, their biggest games recently. And, yeah, these three games have kind of earned him this opportunity to show what he still can do. I thought he was decent against Chelsea and Brentford, but it was Brighton where he was like fantastic before he was kind of forced off with injury. Now, we don't get the chance too often to speak to players after the game, but Phil stopped on Sunday to have a chat and kind of spoke about his having his appendix removed at the end of March, which completely kind of forgotten about, really. But yeah, it was meant to keep him out for 6 weeks and it kept him out for three because he just kind of raced back, but then has felt that since. But he's kind of said now he feels he's back to his best, and he's up for the challenge of making the finals. Now you'd probably say there's one place. Well, Walker, Akanji, and Ake are probably going for two spots at the back, and then in attack, kind of Grealish and Bernardo seem to have those wide positions locked down. But if there's any player that can break in, I think it's going to be Foden, because, like I say, he's just got so much talent.
Yeah, and City are firm favourites going into that FA Cup final, 2-7 on, which is just, United just don't seem to have a cat in hell's chance. But I just want to look at Guardiola's comments at the end of that game. He was asked by several reporters, not just sort of one. He was then asked again and again, sort of, who is available for this FA Cup final? And he sort of said that he's going to take some time off and they're going to start preparing from Wednesday, which is today as we're recording. City are going to start preparing. So it's from today we'll probably start to see squad news coming out. But from what you've seen, Simon, do you think that City are going to have a full squad? And Isaac, your opinion on this as well, from what you've been seeing. Is City peaking at the right time here?
I'd be gobsmacked if all those players are injured come Saturday. I think that's just Pep being Pep. But I mean, no one can say whether they'll be in top form having had that time off, but they'll be there. I think that is just the manager being who he is.
Yeah, I think that's the only risk, isn't it? The fact that he hasn't had all the players available for momentum wise, that's probably the only risk, really. Guardiola's got form for keeping his cards close to his chest, and he's done that throughout his tenure. Obviously beforehand on various players, but I remember on De Bruyne, he was saying, oh, he's unfit. Well, what degree of unfit is that? Who knows? You know, he leaves it ambiguous for a reason. I don't know. Let's see. I know it's a really cop-out answer, but we just don't know. And especially with the Champions League final coming a week later, it'll be interesting because the treble might still be on then, or it might not be. I mean, likelihood is that it will be. But just before I came on, I was just doing a bit of research. And if City do win the FA Cup, then obviously they've won it 7 times then, and only Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, United and Tottenham will have won it more, which is a stat. If nothing else.
Yeah, but also we kind of talk about City having never won the Champions League, which they haven't, but also, you know, they've only won one FA Cup under Guardiola, and that is kind of seen as a bit of a disappointment as well, because the way they've dominated like the league and the League Cup, to miss out so often on the FA Cup is disappointing. And you know, I was speaking to Julian Lescott and he was saying, you know, no kid dreams of winning the Premier League because it's so kind of, you don't know that you're going to be a Premier League elite footballer, but if you make it as a pro, chances are you're going to be in the FA Cup and you're going to have this chance to win it. So everyone dreams of that place at Wembley. And, you know, a lot of these players in the squad have only won one or haven't won it. So there will be that desire to go out and, you know, do well in a competition where they've kind of underachieved in the last few years.
Yeah, it's interesting you should say all that because at the beginning of the season, in a previous life, I was doing a Road to Wembley tour where we started off with a team in the local area and then we branched out to see where they were going. We started off with Trafford FC. And the stories that they've got pictures in their like club room of like Alex Ferguson at their ground with the FA Cup, and it's like those players going into that, they may not ever play an FA Cup final again because it depends on the level and the contract situation. So the amount of like impetus that's put on playing in the FA Cup and winning the FA Cup, you're right in what you're saying, that Pep Guardiola's only what it wants. You know, a lot of people are looking at the fact that City are going to go for the Champions League more because Pep's not won it since he was at Barcelona, and City have just never won it. So it's like, you know, people are sort of forgetting the fact that if Pep's only won the FA Cup as a manager once with City, that he's gonna want to go for it, you know, and he's gonna put his best 11 out. But just to wrap up part one, and just the final say on Brentford, City launched their new home kit, and then wore it for that game against Brentford, which is something we don't... I think Liverpool may have done it last year, the year before, but it's not something that we see very often. Simon, you've done a really good piece on this, which starts out with Manchester City sold a shirt every 12 seconds on the day that their new home kit came out and set a new club record. Just talk us through that, because that is a marketing bit of genius.
Yeah, I think it looks a nice enough kit. It's kind of inoffensive, really. It's sort of designed to be 20 years of the Etihad, which I don't know how you model a shirt on a stadium, but there we go. I think because I seem to be writing these stories every year because they seem to break the records every year, but that is the way that it should be going for a club whose fan base is growing. And some people won't believe it, but some people never do. But City are kind of progressing, and the signing of Haaland has kind of catapulted the sales in Scandinavia and the US, and they're finding different markets, and Puma are coming up with these ideas that are helping engagement and revenue to slip into corporate talk. But it is all meaning that more money is coming into City, and the away kits and third kit that are released, you wouldn't be surprised if there was sort of more sales from those, because like I say, City are just getting bigger and bigger, and if they win the Champions League final, that as well will kind of take them up to the next level for recognition across the world.
Excellent. Right, well, we're going to bring part one to a close there, and in part two we're going to jump in on the trending topics about Manchester City. We'll see you in a sec.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome back to the Talking City podcast with myself, Seb Parkinson, Isaac Johnson and Simon Bajkowski. We're going to jump straight in, Simon, with the story that João Cancelo is not signing for Bayern Munich. What's going on?
Yeah, essentially Bayern had him on loan with an option to buy for about £60 million. It doesn't look like Bayern are going to be taking that option up. We've also had Barcelona manager this week talking about how they were offered Cancelo in January and then suddenly City said no. He kind of left out the bit where City said no because Barcelona wouldn't stump up the money for him, which is very Barcelona. But it's an issue for City, really. Player under contract till 2027. I'm not sure he gets back in at City just because of the way it all fell through the floor in January. But if they aren't going to use him, they've got to sell him. But it remains to be seen who will be willing to buy him and at what price, because Bayern certainly don't seem to be interested for 60 million.
And what about you, Isaac? What do you think of João Cancelo? Do you think City fans will welcome him back with open arms, or do you think he'll be booed off the pitch?
Well, we sort of were given a slight answer with that when he came on, didn't we? When he came on the Etihad, there was. Let's just be clear, though. There was applause for him from some sectors, but there was obviously booing as well. It's difficult to see a way back if he has properly, which he obviously has properly fallen out with Pep. It's hard to see a way back, really. That does leave still the left back? Is it a problem? Is it an enigma? I don't know. A hole perhaps that needs filling if and when he is sold. And it'll be interesting to see how they navigate that. I think it'll be fascinating to see what City do in general, really, over the summer, but especially in that position, because I know it was a point for many City fans that was of concern, probably after the new year, certainly after Cancelo exited. And so it'll be interesting to see how Guardiola goes about strengthening it if he does.
Yeah, well, City have notoriously been clever with their transfers, haven't they? Manuel Kanji came in for less than 20 million and various other players have been brought in. And Cancelo's got a value of around 60 million. So if they can move him on and make some money on it, then all credit to them. But just moving on to other players, and again, this is a bit of transfer talk. Bernardo Silva, Ilkay Gundogan. There's a lot of talk coming up to the end of the season, and Bernardo Silva's been one that's notoriously been talked about leaving Manchester City. He's been unhappy, but then he's played absolutely excellent and he's one of Pep Guardiola's stars. Simon, Isaac, what do you think the future holds beyond September for Bernardo and Gundogan?
That's the big question, isn't it? Midfield is going to be where City's summer is decided. Yeah, Bernardo is in that same boat where he can leave if he wants to and if he gets a credible offer. PSG bid for him last year, but it was too late. Whether they will revive their interest, he certainly got a lot of admirers with the club's hierarchy. And then Gundogan's out of contract, so you know, sort of the mood music maybe up to a few weeks ago was that he was probably leaving. I think there's a bit more hope in the City camp now. There's sort of been a bit of a revision to his terms, where it's kind of the potential for 2 years staying rather than just one. But it's kind of up in the air. And as much as it's good that City are honouring these, you know, the wishes of these players not to sort things before the end of the season, it does leave them in kind of a bit of limbo going into the summer and the start of the transfer market.
It's interesting with Gundogan because as Simon says, you know, the inkling was that he was going to leave, but because his form has picked up so much, not that it's been bad the rest of the season, of course, but he's just gone on to another level. He has been a real leader for City, and he undoubtedly would be a loss either way. But you would think that if Pep lost him, it would be a leader lost in the dressing room, and then it becomes how do you replace that, and who do you target? Because obviously Bellingham looks like he's going Madrid now. I think Simon, you'll be able to give more detail on how much interest there was from City side and how far they were with that. But now Bellingham's out of the question, it's about who do you get and who. Obviously, City are massively appealing. And for me personally, I don't think these allegations hanging over them will actually affect whether players want to come or not at all, actually. It's beyond the players' control. So if Guardiola comes calling, you're very rarely going to say no. In fact, you never hardly say no. But yeah, it's about who do you get in, you know? I mean, there's been links with Rice, potentially, not to directly replace either Silva or Gundogan, but another players as well in the Premier League. I don't know, Sam, what have you been hearing in regards to sort of any midfield potential arrivals?
Yeah, you kind of hit the nail on the head with Gundogan with, you know, his form picking up in the last few months. It's like anyone watching him at this point says, how on earth can you let him go? But at the same time, do you want to make your decision based on 2 months rather than what you were thinking over the whole year? And he is 32, I think. So, you know, there is kind of City will need to watch out and will have their own view on kind of when they think his level will drop. Clearly, as of now, it's not dropping. So, yeah, that is really interesting. And then, yeah, Bellingham looks like he's going to Real. There certainly was interest from from City, and that kind of could be revived again if, say, Real Madrid and Dortmund fail to sort of agree a fee. But it's not looking like Bellingham is coming, which, yeah, like you say, leaves a hole. I think there's been some talk about Kovacic at Chelsea, and obviously Chelsea will be a really interesting club to look at in general, just because they're probably going to have a fire sale to meet all kinds of financial conditions. So Chelsea will be interesting to watch, and obviously Kovacic is potentially available, but City are still kind of waiting on answers from Gundogan and Bernardo, and they're not going to get those before the Champions League final, really.
Brilliant. Well, just before we move on to part three and preview the United v City FA Cup final, what an occasion that's going to be. You guys are driving down there in one car, Sam, and I believe that you, Ty, Samuel, and Joe? Joe going with you?
Yeah.
The four of you in a car. We were talking about potentially putting one of our video producers in with you and making a five-man car and doing a podcast on the way down to do the journey, but it's we've managed to solve it and we don't need to do that. So you guys can go down and bicker in peace without it being recorded.
I was just going to say the swearing would have made it unpublishable anyway.
That's the best bit. No, just before we move on to that preview, Sam, you've done a really, really nice opinion piece here, which is on Erling Haaland could make a point to Man United, Erik ten Hag in the final, and it starts off by pointing out something I was quite surprised at, that Erling Haaland has scored home and away for Man City this season, but he's yet to score at a neutral venue, which is great for Man United fans, by the way, who might think that Erling Haaland might not score against them despite already scoring a hat-trick against them this season. But just run us through that. What has Ten Hag been saying, and what's Haaland's comeback?
Well, I mean, you know, Haaland's got a point to prove, just because I think it's one goal in six. You know, he tends to turn up for the bigger games, and City haven't had too many of those in the last few. But, you know, he'll still want to get back into that vein of scoring. But, no, it was more to do with Ten Hag saying recently that, you know, Ten Hag saying that everyone strengthened in January while United didn't, and United need to spend more. And this is a guy who sort of spent £220 million in summer, and everyone's saying what a great job he's done, but he's made himself look better by being so terrible at the start of the season with Brighton and Brentford, and then you get all that money and Casemiro comes in and you look a bit better. But I mean, the only business City did in January was losing João Cancelo, so either he doesn't consider them a rival because they're so far ahead, or he's just kind of conveniently forgetting things to make a point. But the idea that sort of United are not heavy spenders is kind of one to be put in the bin. But, you know, they could have signed Erling Haaland twice for a lot less than City paid for him and didn't, which is kind of indicative of the way they have spent as badly as City have spent well. And that's why the two clubs are where they are.
Only really Chelsea that are eclipsing United in terms of big and not so very fruitful spending this past few years, especially this year. But that's all for part two. Thanks very much. We'll be back for a full Man City v Man United FA Cup final preview in just a sec. Welcome back to part three of this FA Cup final preview of the Talking City podcast with myself, Seb Parkinson, Isaac Johnson and Simon Bajkowski. Simon, you're heading down to Wembley. You won't be getting the train, by the way, because the trains are all on strike on Saturday. So if anybody listening to this is looking for a last minute trip to Wembley, make sure you drive or get the bus or fly or however you can get there. You will not be going on the train unless you are a train driver and you decide to drive the train yourself. Anyway, Man City, Man United, it's been a big run to the FA Cup final for both clubs. City notably beating Burnley 6-0. Chelsea 4-0, Bristol City 3-0, Arsenal 1-0, Sheffield United 3-0. In fact, they haven't conceded a goal. Simon, just talk me through the City, the team and the squad that you expect to be available and what we can expect from City on the day.
Yeah, I think it will be pretty much a fully fit squad and the strongest team available to Guardiola. I think we will see this pretty much the same team, maybe one, two changes at most for Wembley and Istanbul, because Guardiola knows his best 11. There might be the odd tweak, but you know, you can name nine of the starters already pretty much. It's that cut and dry. So there won't be kind of any surprises for United in those terms, but there may be surprises in the way City set up, because as we've seen over the last few months with John Stones coming into midfield from right back or centre back or other players coming through, we've had 3-2-2-3 or you know, so many different formations and styles of play and changing within the game. And City are so far tactically developed from where they were in January when they played at Old Trafford that United are going to face a very different City team this weekend.
Isaac, from you, what do you think? How do you think this is going to play and how do you think that City are going to perform?
Yeah, well, it's interesting we mentioned the tactical side, because I remember listening to Nathan Ake after City had won the title. He was on the radio and he was saying that basically they'd gone through a lot of different tactical formations on the training pitch, after that Nottingham Forest draw, which numerous people have said that was the turning point for City, players wise anyway. And I think from Pep Guardiola's point of view, he'll set up how he thinks will win the game, but in regards to the opposition, I think he'll set up how he wants to anyway, regardless. Although for United side, they have got a number of people missing, and so that will play a part. So Lisandro Martinez for United is out. Martial yesterday, he's out. Now, whether he would have started or not, I don't know.
I mean, that's a bonus for United fans, let's be honest.
Yeah. Because the likelihood is in that case is that Rashford comes in to the centre, which now he obviously scored the winner in the January game, but City are a much different side since then. And in the 6-3 defeat for United at the Etihad, he played up front and was very, very ineffective. And him going from the left to the centre will null a lot of United's threat. And actually, if City do play the three at the back, the 3-2-4-1 or whichever variation of that, they'll probably be able to deal with the attack fine, whether that Sancho comes in or Garnacho on the left, whoever. I think they'll be able to deal with it okay. So I don't expect too many changes between the two finals. I think it'll also depend on how the game pans out itself. If City absolutely run away with it, then lo and behold, would you take someone off in a final to rest them for another final? Well, City fans will hope that might be a prospect, but in reality, it will be a case of strongest team.
Yeah, well, United had their awards ceremony sort of earlier this week, and a lot of the talk at that ceremony was, you know, stopping City from winning the treble, make sure United are the only team that win the treble. Simon, how do you see the game playing out from your perspective? You've been at all these City games all season. You've seen City beat United 6-3. You've seen City lose to United at Old Trafford 2-1. Just where's this game won and lost for City?
I think the Guardiola is always wary of pace and pace on the counter that can sort of nullify his defence and, you know, hurt them instantly when they're out of possession. And we saw that in the January game, albeit an absolutely ridiculous goal that should never have been allowed and has since been admitted would never be allowed again. I think the game changer as far as City are concerned is that Real Madrid at home performance. Because Real Madrid away, they did a similar thing. They bossed the game, but then in an instant, Camavinga and Vinicius kind of made it 1-0 Real. And that is how City have been hurt in these type of games before. But Real at home, Vinicius didn't get a kick. Benzema didn't get a kick. You had one of the most lethal attacks in Europe that City just did not get anywhere near Edison's goal. And that is how that will give them the confidence to say, you can do it. You can shut them out for all that time. So go and do it again. And yeah, like Isaac says, Rashford through the middle is probably less dangerous for City than on a wing. And Martial, as much as he's kind of frustrated United fans for so long with his kind of inconsistency with fitness, like his pace would worry City. Whereas, they're still going to have plenty of players to be concerned with, but I think they will just look to play their game, dominate, keep the ball, and kind of use that confidence and swagger that they've had in the last 2 months where they just looked unbeatable.
Yeah, it was incredible watching City just absolutely humiliate Real Madrid at the Etihad. I mean, I was there the day before watching Real Madrid train, and the flags that were put out to create that atmosphere. And, you know, people say that City don't sell tickets. Honestly, that stadium was bouncing from minute one. I mean, the family atmosphere outside the ground as well is great for up-and-coming fans. And a lot of people criticise City for not having a big fan base, but City are building a really nice family-based fan base, aren't they? We've got the City Square outside the ground and everything, but the football on show, the entertainment value, they absolutely destroyed Real Madrid. And if City turn up to Wembley and play a similar game, United, unless they score on the counter-attack, like we were saying about Real Madrid's home tie, you know, it could be another humiliating game. But then it all depends how the two teams set up. And Isaac, from you, what sort of starting 11 can you see Pep going against, and what tactically do you think he'll do?
I think he'll go with his strongest lineup. I think with Pep, for me, the only way I can see City not winning is if, as he alludes to jokingly ever since, it's overthinking, doing something to try and be a bit too clever. But I think he's learned his lesson there. So I think you'll have all the big names starting. I've got a hunch De Bruyne is actually not as unfit as he was perhaps implying. So I think obviously he'll get the nod. Obviously, Haaland, you start with Haaland. On the right, if Bernardo's fit, probably him. Gundogan. And then on the left, you'd say Grealish, but Foden hasn't been playing too badly, and obviously Grealish is a doubt. So obviously, either one of them. Yeah, exactly. And then sitting, obviously, you can't drop Rodri. Rodri, perhaps with Stones. I know I'm going back to Frontier. I'm just in my mind how I'm working it. Stones next to Rodri, and then the back three of Diaz, Akanji, if fit, and Ake, I think, probably.
Scott Carson in goal.
Scott Carson in goal, absolutely.
Well, the goalkeeper's interesting because, I mean, Ortega's played every round and not conceded a goal, but surely you start Edison.
Zach Steffen.
I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, Pep's talks about Ortega and how good he is, but, you know, it's some call if he starts him over Edison.
It's true. And if it gets to penalties, you never know, he might bring him off the bench to save the day. But it's a call that you've seen a lot of managers make. I think Jose Mourinho's known for it. He'll champion his goalkeeper or whatever player, and then he'll drop him and just say, sorry, you know, we won the cup. You know, it was the right decision to make. If they don't win the cup, then they go, well, blame me, and I drop the keeper or whatever. But just before we wrap up, guys, and let Simon go for his preparation for his long trip with the United correspondents down to Wembley, can we get a score prediction from you? How do you think that the game will go, whether it goes to penalties, extra time, 90th minute, 90, you know, a 93-20 again. What we saying?
If City turn up as they should, then I think we're talking 3-0, 3-1, 3-0 if they turn up as they should. But I do think if they're not going to win the treble, then this is the game where they slip up rather than Inter.
Yeah, I think, like I said before, the only risk is the fact that they've not been able to play the best team for these last few matches, so there could be slight rustiness in a few players. If they are on song like they were against Madrid, then it could be four, potentially. I suspect, though, because a number of players haven't played for a little while, and if they do play, they'll still win comfortably. I would go for a 3-0, and perhaps only a 3-1 if it was towards the end of the game, City have won it, and it's a counter-attack or something like that. But I am going to go 3-0 myself.
Well, for what it's worth, I think United will score an early goal, City will then bounce back and it'll go to extra time, and be won on penalties, and David De Gea won't save a single one. There you go.
But Ortega I'm going will. Out with Ortega will.
Or Stefan or Carson or whoever he puts in net. Anyway, guys, really appreciate your time. We've done a good preview there. Hope everybody's enjoyed listening. And if you are travelling down to Wembley, give us a shout. Give Simon a wave if you see him driving down in his decolled Manchester City, Manchester Evening News car. And we will see you in a week's time when we preview and review the Champions League final, preview the Champions League final and review the FA Cup final. And it'll either be myself and Isaac and Simon, or it could be Joe, it could be Dan. We don't know who's going to be back at this stage because everybody is on holiday or taking time off. So we will see you very soon. Thanks for listening. See you again.